Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we are going to have quite an interesting selection of guests. My first guest, his name is Kurt Kuntz. This is a man who has been an executive at a Fortune 500 company. He's traveled across Europe. His book, A Million Steps, is a real interesting one because he ended up doing something that maybe a lot of us would like to do, but we just don't know if we have the time to do. And that is to do what I guess millions of people have done, a pilgrimage across Spain. And I want to welcome to the show Kurt Kuntz. This is quite intriguing, this journey. What made you decide to take it, and how did you learn about this?
No, Donna, first off, thank you so much for having me on the program here. I first learned about the Camino de Santiago from a friend in 2008. When he told me about the trip and he was going to walk it, I thought he was quite candidly a little bit nuts. I said, you're going to go to Spain and do what? Walk 500 miles? But it was my first introduction to the Camino. In 2010, I saw a movie called The Way, which I think a lot of people have seen, starring Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez. And while I was sitting in the theater, I knew that at some point in time I would take that journey. And in 2012, the sea pretty much parted ways, and it looked like the opportune time for me to go. And so I bought a plane ticket, and 3 weeks later, I was over there walking the trail.
Now, when you think of doing something like this, and you have to gear up for a trip like this, most of us, I mean, I don't even think most people have a clue about what it would take. How did you know what you should take? Because you have to put everything in that backpack on your back. 500 miles is a substantial distance. My feet were hurting after the first couple of chapters.
Very easy. There's a number of guidebooks out there, and the one I like the best was made by a man named John Brierley, and it's available on Amazon. That book pretty much tells you what you need to take. The beauty of a trip like this, it's a minimalist trip. It's not one where you're bound to overpack. In reading through all of the lists that I found before taking the trip, I mean, you need 3 pairs of socks, 3 pairs of underwear, a couple of pairs of shorts, a protective coat, maybe a hat, some gloves, simple electronics, a camera, maybe a music player or whatever you need along those lines. But it's not one where you have to overthink in taking things. The other thing is, remember, commerce is available over there. These little villages are really no more than 3 to 5 miles apart. So you don't need to overpack and take too much stuff. There's always things available for purchase over there that you may have left behind.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's reassuring, because I could just envision, of course, I have a good imagination, having to go for hours. And I'm thinking, sunscreen? Do I need hairspray? I mean, there's all of these things that go through your head. Because you're going to be, really, when you think about it, when you're doing a hike like this, I know what I've said is just sounds very femininely frivolous, but the truth is that this is not something that is a race. This is really a journey, and that's one of the things that I found very intriguing. Right at the very beginning of your book, there was a person called a hospitalero, and said, this is your trip, your life, your adventure. Do not make the trip for anyone else. Make it for yourself. If you walk with a new friend and they walk too fast, say goodbye. Let them go. This is your trip. Your Camino is for you. And I know of someone else, and I mentioned this to you before we went on air, that I'd interviewed on the show, a woman. And she was an artist, and she did artwork as well as writing a book that included her artwork. And it really was an eye-opening journey that they went through in Spain. And getting it from a male perspective, I think is really very, very insightful, because this really was a trip of awakening and becoming mindfully present for you, wasn't it?
Very much so, Donna. It's a transformative trip for everybody that makes the journey. I would say that of all the people that I met, I don't think one person came out of Santiago the same person that started in St. John. It really, no matter what your background is, where you're from, what's happening, it's like putting yourself through a little shredder and you come out a different person and then you regroup and move forward. I could not have been happier to have taken this trip. I had a lot of awakenings and a very enjoyable experience.
Now, I found it intriguing that you had utter dependency on other people, you said, for everything. You had no knowledge, no experience about where to go, what to eat, where to stay. You couldn't speak Spanish. You had no details about the terrain you were going to be crossing. And this, in a way, was, if you will, a test of faith, because you're in the middle of an environment you don't have a clue about. And this is not something that most people, especially someone that's been an executive, usually when you're of that modality and that background and experience, you plan ahead. But this is totally the opposite for you. And your stories in here, in the book, A Million Steps, they're so fascinating. Now, an albuquerque, what is an albuquerque?
It's albergue, and an albergue is where you stay for the evening. They essentially are hostels that are for pilgrims that are on the walk, and you have to be on the walk in order to stay there. The way that you prove that you're on the walk, at the beginning, you get it's called a credential or a passport, which is no international significance at all. It's an accordion-type booklet, and when you walk in to check into these places, they ask you for it, and they put a stamp on it. At the end of the trail in Santiago, there's a pilgrim's office. You show them your passport with all the stamps on it, and they award you a Compostela and put you in the record books as an individual that has, one of 2 million people that has completed the Camino de Santiago.
Fascinating. When did this start? What established this pilgrim's route? And
this
how long
really
ago did it
started
start?
Out as a Christian pilgrimage. In 44 A.D., there was a man named St. James who was believed to be an apostle of Jesus. He is reported to have gone to Jerusalem and was promptly beheaded by King Herod for refusing to denounce religion. They put his body on a ship, sent it back to Spain, and the story says that the ship sank and his body was recovered on the shores covered in scallop shells. And that scallop shell is a theme of the walk. 800 years later, a shepherd apparently rediscovered this grave, and it's believed that the cathedral in Santiago, below the cathedral, is where the bones of St. James resides. So in the Middle Ages, 1 million people from throughout Europe walked from their front doors all the way to Santiago seeking penance from St. James. And the thing that amazes me, Donna, is those folks, not only did they walk there, when they got there, they turned around and they walked home.
As you fast forward to today,
it's much more diverse as far as the crowd that walks. There certainly is a large group of religious people. I myself tend to be a little more spiritual. There's also some people that have it as a simple bucket list idea or maybe are enchanted by the physical journey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a wide, diverse group of people that do it today, but it definitely started out as a Christian pilgrimage.
I had to chuckle at one section in your book because you said, pilgrims typically lose substantial weight on the trip. And I thought, wow, here are all these people that have just overindulged for the holidays and we're not quite finished. New Year's is day after tomorrow. And wouldn't it be great to be able to do something like this maybe once a year? And boy, that'd keep you shaped up really well. You lost quite a bit
really
of weight.
It really tones your body. I've been into physical fitness for a large portion of my life, and I never really viewed walking as being something that really seemed like it was that difficult. But when you do it for such an extended period of the day, you really, really, the pounds melt off. I ate everything I wanted to, and I definitely like ice cream and all the bad things. There's a lot of bread over there and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up losing close to 18 pounds on the trip.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
and for that, I'm 6'5", and when I left my home, I weighed about 215 pounds.
Wow. Okay, folks, so you know right there, that's a tip. You want to take off weight, get out your walking stick, which was ended up being a very good tool for you, you found, walking sticks, and get moving. But you covered how many miles a day, 24 miles a day?
I think my average was 17 miles per day. And up front, I walked a little bit. I covered more miles up front, and it was a bit of my personality. It wasn't a race at all, but I wanted to get a little bit ahead so I'd have a little bit of kind of time in the bank in case I ran into injury or bad weather or something along those lines. So the upfront miles were a little bit more. The last week, I ended up doing about 10 or 11 miles per day, and it was a really nice transition to kind of slow down as I was coming in towards the end. And by starting out a little faster than most people, I was always walking into groups of new people. In the end of the journey, I kind of walked in with that same little group that the relationships became a little bit deeper with those particular people.
Now, I was amazed to find out that more than 1,000 pilgrims start each day. Is there a particular section of the time of year that people do this, or do they do it all year round?
People do it year round, and here's a very brief history, Donna. The popularity of this thing is really off the charts right now. In 1985, 5,000 people did the walk. In 1995, 20,000. 2005, 100,000. 2010, 200,000 people did the walk. The
wow.
Summertime is by far the most busy time, with more than 1,000 pilgrims starting every day. The time that I went, I started on September the 12th, and we had, I think there was about 300 pilgrims that started on that day. So if you take the shoulder seasons, the spring or the fall, you're going to have fewer folks. But even the capacity, when you get up to 1,000 a day, beds become an issue. When I started, beds were not an issue. I never had to worry about, you know, not kind of racing to a place in order to get a bed.
One of the symbols, you say, when you're on this walk is a yellow arrow hat pin. Why is that significant?
Well, the yellow arrow is the marker for the Camino. As you're walking along, this yellow arrow is your friend. It is on bridges, it's on power poles, it's on buildings, it's on sidewalks, bridges, rocks, whatever you name it. The yellow arrow points to where you go. And there's no, you know, Department of Parks and Recreation that maintains these. These yellow arrows are painted and maintained by the good folks that live and support the Camino. And it tells you where to go. And it's pretty amazing that you walk all 500 miles with complete trust and faith in this little yellow arrow. In the hat pin story, there's a woman, I believe it's the one you had mentioned, Joyce, a woman from Bellingham, Washington, that at the end, I met her and I saw this pin on her hat, and I loved it because it was the yellow arrow. And we ended up staying in the same albergue that night, having a very nice dinner together, and at the end of the dinner, she asked me to open my hand up, and she dropped that little pin in my hand, and it resides on my hat right now, and I see it every day.
Mm-hmm. I had to chuckle at some of your stories, because it wasn't just walking you did, but also performing. There was a point, there were about 60 of you that had reached this particular environment, and it was time to eat, and one of the guides that you came into contact with said, okay, if you want food, you need to sing for your meal. And it wasn't just you, it was the other people in the group. This was wonderful. I mean, this was really a lot of fun. They had entertainment at this village. How far along were you in the trip, and tell us what happened there?
I think I was about, probably 8 or 9 days into the trip, and you never know what's going to happen. And I didn't make plans to walk to a certain destination. I walked until my body said I'd had enough for that day. Mm-hmm. On that particular day, I ended up in a city called Grenon, and it's a very small city, probably 300 people in the village. I ended up in a parish facility, which means that it's a church one, and I had never been to one before. I didn't really know there was a difference. When I showed up, they said it's donation only, so you weren't required to pay, but most everybody certainly pays more than they normally would have. And unlike the other places, they fed us. and I'd never had a group meal either. So they said that there was, I think we were supposed to get together at 6 o'clock to prepare the meal together. At 7 o'clock, there was a mass, and then at 8 o'clock, we were supposed to have dinner. Well, I showed up at 6. There were way too many people, and I wasn't needed. I don't do the mass, so I skipped that part, and I showed back up at 8 to have this meal. Well, it was kind of a ruse. They had everyone gather in front of the building, and the guy said, look, we have to, the bakery down the street has more capacity to cook the food, so we're going to have to go down there, and in order to go down there, we're going to have to sing. So he handed out a guitar and some pots and pans, and we all marched down the street to this bakery singing. I think we sang We Have the Whole World in Our Hands. Mm-hmm. 60 strangers from around the world, laughing and smiling, walking down a street. It was really a moment, probably one of my favorite nights of the entire trip.
Well, you were given sainthood, too. You were called the saint of the rear wipe. What brought that wonderful title into your life?
Yeah, there was a morning I woke up, and there was about six women sitting around a table, and they were kind of nervous, and they looked at me, and they were kind of trying to catch my eye, and I didn't understand what was going on, and it turned out that the women's room was out of toilet paper, and so they kindly begged me to go in the men's room and thieve a few rolls and pass them around, and yes, I was christened the saint of rear wipe that day.
You just never know what's going to be happening on these wonderful, wonderful trips. And sainthood definitely wasn't something that you expected.
Not at all.
You found that you really had to pay attention to your feet. This was something that the shoes that you wore, looks like from some of the photographs, you have a number of photographs in your book, some of the photographs show that you're wearing tennis shoes. Now, you had the experience of blisters, and you used a particular bandage. It was called Compeed, C-O-M-P-E-E-D. And you said it works like a second skin. Do most of your hiking stores, et cetera, do they carry this kit so you can put this in your backpack?
You know, it's very surprising, Donna. In Europe, this product called Compeed is available everywhere, and especially on the Camino. It is the best thing I've ever seen for a blister, and everybody over there uses it. You can buy it over there. I don't think it's available here in the U.S., but on the Camino, it's a standard product that everybody has. And another nice thing about it, people are always willing to help other people out. So you'll find somebody by the side of the road, their shoes off, and they may have a blister, and everybody's willing to share. So if you don't have one of these particular patches or the blister kit, someone will stop and help you out, and that's one of the beautiful things about the Camino.
That was a very poignant part of many of your stories, the interaction with the different people that you met, and new friendships were formed in some cases, other cases no. It really was a very personal experience, and what the gentleman had told you at the beginning, you do this walk for yourself. You're not doing it for anybody else. You're doing it for you. And it's meant to be a transitional experience in awakening you to yourself. And you had many people that shared very personal stories as to why they were doing it. Some of the stories were quite heartbreaking. But I wanted to touch on an aspect of your personal life. You wrote quite a bit about how your father was an alcoholic, and there were many issues during this walk that sort of bubbled up to the surface of your consciousness. And you talk a great deal about how you yourself had made a decision, because you were going down a patterning that was very similar to your dad's, to not do that. Why was this so significant in relationship to your trip?
Oh, I would say that when you're on a journey like this, you obviously have a lot of time to think about a lot of different things. And my father died of alcoholism in 2001, and it was very difficult. The guy was my hero, and I kind of watched him melt away. There's a long history of alcoholism in my family. And this kind of sends chills down my spine, but I was born on January 18th, 1964. On that same day, my grandfather died of alcoholism. And I was marching down a similar path. And when my father passed in 2001, I just said, I'm never going to drink again. And I swore it off that day and never looked back. And it was really probably one of the wisest decisions of my life. And as you're on a walk like this, you just, you know, you look back and you resonate and you kind of get a deeper feeling of as to the what, hows, and whys of previous things in your life and a lot of time for reflection.
Mm-hmm. You met a wonderful man named Steve on your journey.
Yeah.
And you asked him, and he was a mature gentleman. You asked him where he was going, and he said to you, wherever I can make the most difference. And at 60 years of age, he terminated his home lease, gave away everything he had, went to Spain to walk the Camino. He had no plans on coming back to the U.S. He was going to dedicate his life to helping other people. And, wow, I mean, this is a very unique individual on a very special journey of his own. How did this affect you, this story?
It's just every day the people you meet, first off, the bonds are immediate. You have so much in common in that you are a pilgrim that you just immediately bond with people. And even though they're strangers from throughout the world, it really feels like one big family kind of walking each other home to Santiago. On this particular morning, I woke up early, and when you leave early, it's dark outside, so you're walking with a headlamp. And I noticed a lamp behind me that was kind of catching up pretty rapidly. And I did. I asked the guy, I said, well, where are you going? I meant, where is he going that day? And he came up with the line that you just told me. And I kind of had chills again. I said, this is not a normal encounter with a person.
Mm-hmm.
And this man left the Camino and actually went to Egypt to try to help the people that were working on the revolution over there. And he since then has traveled around the world to different places. And ironically, he lives not very far from my home, and about 5 or 6 months ago, he was passing through my hometown. He stopped at my house, and we had a cup of coffee and some lentil soup.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. There you have a friend that has very unique stories to tell. That is just amazing. You said that in the process of doing this walk, and there's so much of your story that's really a wonderful read, you said you came to an understanding that life must never be taken for granted, that there's absolutely no guarantee that tomorrow will exist, and sometimes if it does, our physical condition may limit our enjoyment. The only time to be happy is now. That is quite a step. That is quite a big step of personal awakening.
Yeah, I would say before I left on the trip, and something I've endeavored to do my whole life, is to figure out what really being in the now is. And for me, it sounds like such a simple concept. I mean, you're alive all the time, so you have to be in the now, and the answer is most of us aren't. The Camino really clarified it for me, and I'll tell you how. When you wake up, you don't know where you're going to go, if your body's going to be able to go where you might go. You don't know where you're going to stay, who you're going to walk with, what you're going to eat, or what the weather's going to be like. In that constant state of being challenged, you have little time to think about yesterday or tomorrow. And with that, to me, that's what being in the now is. You then spend 30 or 45 days, which is about the range of time it takes to walk the Camino, in that blissful state, and you really get a feel for what being in the now is. Since coming home, just having that realization has been very important to me, because as I find myself drifting into the past now, I ask myself, what am I doing here? Am I learning and trying to get out of my past, or am I swimming in some sea of trauma or drama that's happened that I can't change? The same with the future. I think we all need some practical planning. You have to have the rent money and you have to have food in the cupboards. But do you really need to have a grand plan of what's going to happen 5, 10, 15 years down the road? And I think when you look too far into the horizon, you miss what's right below your feet. And what's below your feet is the now. And that is where I strive to be every single day and every moment.
Speaking about feet, you had to get another pair of shoes, because you literally wore a huge hole in one of your shoes and you couldn't walk. And how far along were you on the trip when this happened?
I was about two-thirds away through the trail, and it was very odd. I don't know of hardly any other pilgrims that had trouble with their shoes. And the shoes that I took were Patagonia hiking shoes. They were, you know, high quality, and I literally wore a hole through them. And I think that one of the reasons why is my size. I told you I'm 6'5", and with the weight and the length of my stride, I think that as that shoe hit the ground, I just eviscerated it.
Mm-hmm.
And like so many things on the Camino, I literally walked into a tiny shop in a tiny village, and I found the exact same shoe. It was simply one size up. And without being there, it's just, you can't comprehend how lucky that was. It was beyond a needle in a haystack. Commerce is so much different over there. There's no Walmarts. There's no REIs. There's nothing like that. And the people that live in Spain tend to be pretty short. So for me to find a shoe for my gigantic foot was pretty miraculous.
Well, that's such a story. If you were to tell anyone that they need to consider doing something like this, or if they made an inquiry, let me put it this way. If they said, gee, I'd like to do this, what's the process you go through?
Well, first off, you have to start and you have to commit. And if you're going to do something like that, it's really not that hard. You can buy a guidebook and figure out what to take, then you book a plane ticket, and you simply go over there and do it. And I know that sounds like a pretty simple process, but really starting and committing is the most important thing to do. I meet people all the time. They say, that sounds great. I'm going to do that in 5 years, or I'm going to do that in 6 years, or whatever. And that's not likely to happen. Once you buy that plane ticket, you are definitely committed to going. And the biggest advice I would have for anybody is when you go on a trip like this, do not take any expectations. If you go in search of something, or if you go with preconceived ideas, you're not going to be happy. If you go and realize that every day will be what it is, and there will be some big highs and some big lows, and you just go and learn, you'll find that the universe opens up like a big blossoming flower for you.
Kurt Kuntz, your book, A Million Steps, is a fascinating read. You share so much of yourself, the stories of the people you encounter, photographs about different areas that you pass through. It really is a very pleasant read, and of course the cover is just spectacular. I don't know what that cover, I'm sure that it's a part of Spain, but it is just gorgeous with the billowy clouds and the foggy mist covering areas of the trail in front of you. It's just absolutely mesmerizing. Now, people can find out more about your trip. They can go to your website, Kurt Kuntz, and that's KURTKOONZ, Kurt Kuntz, KOONTZ.com. They can find out more about what you've done. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Don, it's been a real pleasure. I appreciate your time, and thank you for allowing me to be on your program.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. Check out Kurt Kuntz if you think maybe you'd like to do an adventure like this. Sounds really like a lot of fun. Donna Sebo here, and you'll lose all that chubby fat that maybe you put on because of the holiday goodies you've been consuming with gusto. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience? Such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings. If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. Again, send your story to donna@delphiinternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo. Our second guest today is Joseph Gallenberger, or Gallenberger. And Joseph has been on the show before, and we had talked about his book, Inner Vegas, Creating Miracles, Abundance, and Health. But Joseph has since come out with a CD called Liquid Luck. Now, here we are. We're almost at a brand new year. Maybe you've had a tough time. Maybe you say, I could use whatever might be available to me. And I thought it would be a great gift to give to someone, especially yourself, if you want to do some things to make a difference in your life. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. How are you today?
I'm doing magnificently. Now, Joseph, is it Gallenberger or...
It's Gallenberger.
Gallenberger. Okay, that's what I needed to have a correction on. Okay. Joseph, you have your book on Inner Vegas was a fascinating read. You have really investigated the powers of the mind on multiple levels. You're a psychologist. You've got 30 years of experience behind you. And you really got into psychokinesis. You're involved with the Monroe Institute, which I'm familiar with. And you have ended up evolving into this arena of mind skill. Why did you decide to come up with this CD? I mean, you already put out Inner Vegas.
Yeah, so I have the Inner Vegas book, and I have workshops called Inner Vegas Adventures that we've done 67 of over the last decade, and a home study course that's very extensive in manifestation called Sync Creation. But I was looking for something that would sort of summarize all of that couple decades of experience with manifesting and using energy for healing and psychokinesis into a form where people could easily use it and immediately see results. And so I came up with this meditation CD. So in a bit more than a half hour, just listening to it, then you can try the Liquid Luck in your daily life.
Well, in doing this, because I know you use part of the HemiSync process in this CD, Liquid Luck, and that engages both sides of the brain. Give us a little bit of information about the HemiSync process, because Mr. Monroe was quite a researcher relative to this, and of course he's been gone now for a number of years, and the Monroe Institute is carrying on his work. But what is that for those that are listening to the show today that have never even heard of it?
Well, it's a binaural beat technology, meaning there's two different tones, one in each ear. And say you put 104 cycle in one and 100 in the other. The difference is four cycles, and it'll encourage the brain to go in the four-cycle rhythm. And so in that example, four-cycle rhythm is associated with deep sleep. So if they wanted to have a CD that would cause you to go to sleep easily, they would use that type of four-cycle rhythm there. Liquid Luck is based on binaural beat technology. It's actually not HemiSync, which is a trademark term of Monroe, but it's very similar. It's just one that I designed myself to use the same binaural beat technology to get a deep meditative state very quickly so people can visualize on the CD. And so what we find with binaural beat technologies is that people can go into deep meditative states within 5 minutes, where it may have taken years of disciplined meditation to learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, with this, when someone is using this CD, now this is about 37 minutes, mm-hmm. and you have a very good speaking voice for this, so that works out well. Tell us a little bit about the process that you're using here. Why is it that this is going to stimulate something on a level of manifestation? Why is this a useful tool?
Well, it's designed, first of all, to slip under the usual dragons that guard the treasures of manifestation, if you will. Slip under things like feelings of lack or fear or guilt, and also limiting beliefs about what we deserve and what we can do. So slipping under all of that, and it uses an image of, after relaxing, of imagining yourself as a wizard or an alchemist and creating a vial before you filled with golden sparkling liquid, and into there putting some very powerful things that we found are central to manifestation, because manifestation, basically the best energy to do it is from a wide open heart. So we have people in that meditation fill their vial with happiness and gratitude, abundance, praise, compassion, love, good fortune. And then whenever they would like in life to have a day filled with synchronicity, serendipity, good fortune, all they need to do is remember their liquid luck, take a drink, and they'll have the wisdom, insight, courage to act at just the right time and just the right way to have their dreams come true for the day. Have a very lucky day.
Now, and, when you started developing this, Joseph, did you work with some people on this? What enabled you to put your script together for this? I know you've got so much experience behind you.
It came mostly from experience, and then what we saw is, even writing the script, I sent it out to some of my friends who've been working with me, and they began to have instant success at winning jackpots in casinos and having luck in their lives. And in fact, when the CD came out in August, within days, we got some real interesting reports of folks solving problems in laboratories that had resisted efforts for 2 years, somebody selling a home an hour after listening to Liquid Luck that had been on the market with no action for months. One of my favorites is a lady called and said she'd been looking for 70 years for a four-leaf clover, and she found one the day after listening to Liquid Luck. Folks won raffles, found money when money was tight, you know, day before pension checks came in. Disabled person got offered free tuition to a very expensive course they wanted to take, and also won an important court battle. And the stories have continued, people winning $1,000 scratch ticket and 2 weeks later winning another, an inventor filled with new inventions. So it seems like it's very effective with just even one listening to then apply that and have your luck be much better.
So really, in many ways, it's, and you made a comment about having an open heart. And when someone is listening to this, they could be laying down because this is a type of meditation, but you don't want to be too comfortable because you do want to be pay attention to what's being said, correct?
Yes, the binaural beats will keep you very relaxed, but usually will keep you alert enough so you won't fall asleep, and you can relax, do it in a recliner, laying down on bed. And the reason we talk about the things that in there is when we feel genuinely happy, gratitude, abundance feelings, like attracts like, and so those good things come toward us. And we put the energy of praising in because I think it's one of the highest energies you can have, containing pure joy, awe, celebration at the power and beauty and magic of life. And then putting in compassion gets us out of ego and into feelings of oneness with the world. And unconditional love joins us with Source or God and infinitely increases the power of our hearts. So the whole wording is designed to really open your heart and you get you in a very high positive state of energy. So some people are using it daily just because they like the way the thing feels or how it makes them feel, as well as whatever they might be manifesting.
Now, you, in doing your study on psychokinesis and your book, Inner Vegas, which you go into a great deal of detail on the process that you use, this is something some people would find extremely interesting. And, of course, we always, every week, there's always announcements about lottery winners, et cetera. And there's always the aspiration, gee whiz, if only I had $1 million, I could make all the changes I want to make in life. But this actually goes a little bit deeper in respect of just what you have mentioned. And it's that synchronicity. In this CD, you're not necessarily focusing on doing the gambling like you've done in Vegas. And I know you've been very successful with that, and you've had so many tours that you have taken people on to show them how to do this. And it's just been wonderful for you. But this really is to, I think, sort of shift the flow of your processing and your thinking so that you are open to synchronicity, to receptivity. That's very, very important.
Yes, and again, big important thing to me is that people can get verification, because without that, you don't know if you're doing it right, or you know, begin to worry about whether you deserve it, or so you have to have something that gives a good, clear feedback that yep, this works, and I can be a fortunate person or a lucky person, and so that was the goal there, is to really give strong, substantive, verifiable feedback. I mentioned, you know, some of those things, but a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll send a report of just a day of a chain of things where everything just goes right, and and then they go, wow, that's really different than my usual day.
Well, I think that this is a recording that could enable people, if you wanted to, just to start off a brand new year with a different kind of shift. We're bombarded every day with stuff that's, especially in media, stuff that's not working. And I think to be able to create a mind shift within yourself, empowering yourself right where you are right now, is one of the best gifts you can ever give to yourself. And we're coming into a new year. Joe's Liquid Luck is a wonderful CD to be able to play. And, Joseph, where do they go? What's your website?
Well, there's only one place you can get Liquid Luck, and that's on my website. The easiest way to get there is the title of the book, Inner, I-N-N-E-R, Vegas, like Las Vegas. So innervegas.com. And so if you go to innervegas.com, on the top lists the workshops and we do and things like that, but also there's a tag named Products, and you just click there and you'll see Liquid Luck.
Well, I think it is a marvelous tool to be able to utilize. And if you feel, for those of you listening, if you're feeling like your life is out of sync, why not just get something that is going to enable you to realize you don't have to be out of sync? And for all of the bad news that we're pummeled with every single day, know that there's an option. There's an option to put your mind into a space where you want to be, not where someone else is declaring life is, but it's where you want to be. And that's very empowering. And I do think that it gives you the option of choice as to what steps you want to take as well. So, Joseph Gallenberger, I'm very grateful to you. Thank you so much. And
thank you for having me on.
Your luck be just continuing, as you are so amply demonstrating.
That sounds wonderful, and I wish everybody a happy new year.
Thank you, sir. Donna Sebo here. We are taking a break. Check out Liquid Luck, a heart-based meditation designed to increase good fortune. What have you got to lose? Not a thing. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Last week, for those of you who listen to the show regularly, I told you that I had an announcement to make. First of all, I'm going to give you the phone number to call in to talk with me if you'd like for me to light up your life about the coming 2014. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call into. But I wanted to also make the announcement. I'll be making it today and tomorrow. That tomorrow will be my last show on BBS. I have had 6 wonderful years with them, and there is an opportunity for me to move to another network, and I am going to be doing that. And if you'd like to have more information on it, you can go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you can find out the details. That will be posted there probably by tomorrow, but I did want to give that information out to you, so tomorrow will be my last show with BBS. I did want to share a story with you. This is about some unique circumstances. I love paranormal stuff, don't you? Well, this is about fires. Mm-hmm. They call them battling blazes. Now, this particular situation, there's a few of them that I came across, in December of 1941, in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, there was a golf and country club. It was called Dominion. They were having some real challenges. They were having these wildfires. Nobody could figure out what caused them. One of the customers was attempting to get his coat and found out that a piece of paper had burst into flames. Why? Nobody had a clue. There was a gentleman, his name was Nicholas White. He happened to be the club's owner and manager. He gets out a fire extinguisher, goes towards the fire because he could see it. But the next thing that happened just stopped him dead in his tracks. He's going by a table that's covered by a tablecloth. As he's going by it, it bursts into flames. He was astonished. Every single table in the dining room that he was in is bursting into flames. A little scary? I think so. The flames were a blue color. Waiters were going ballistic. They just couldn't believe it. They were using water pitchers. Then a rag that was at a bar section, it caught fire. People in the kitchen said towels were on fire. Now, the owner, White, he went to grab a phone book to call the fire department. But you know what? When he opened up his desk drawer, flames flew out. Boom, just like that. Out of the drawer. A little unnerving, wouldn't you say? Well, apparently they had an apartment upstairs. And Mr. White, his wife, was up there. The curtains in her bedroom started catching fire. And they had 11 rooms upstairs. Flames started in every single one of them. Now, when they counted all of it, in this one environment, 43 fires had occurred. They were trying to evaluate this because it's totally illogical. None of this was making any sense. There was a fire inspector there, and the fire inspector happened to meet up with the insurance guy, and the insurance guy said, these people are really nuts. Fires just don't happen. They just don't happen like that. And the insurance said, the insurance guy said to the people that were around him, yeah, I am supposed to believe that things just burst into flame. Well, he spied a broom, and he pointed at the broom. He said, for example, that broom is just going to instantaneously catch on fire, and it did right in front of his eyes. Makes you wonder if there was someone, a spook somewhere, that said, I don't like the way you play your golf game or what they were serving for lunch. I don't know, but this was really, really strange. Well, Travelers Insurance Company in 1951 said that there were a series of fires in a house that nobody could explain. This happened in Indiana. Flames erupted between a box spring and a mattress, came out through a calendar, also came out through a pair of overalls hanging on a door. Pages of a book were found to be burning, the pages, just the pages, not the cover, just the pages burning, inside of a drawer that they noticed was smoking. Again, the book cover wasn't affected by the fire at all. In that one house, during the day, 28 fires had burst forth. Why? Nobody knows. A little bit of the paranormal for you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Nicola Christie. She is in England, and her book, Contemporary Spirituality Evolving in This Evolving World. And also, we're going to be talking with J.A. Dance, a fascinating novel called Second Watch. So we have a dynamic pair of people tomorrow, and I hope that you will join me. And I wanted to also say again, tomorrow will be my last show here at BBS. So do give me a buzz. And updated information about the transition, I will be doing my new program on January the 2nd, and the details go to my website, and you'll find out more. Here we are coming to a closing part of the year, a year that has been dynamic on so many different levels. And 2014 is going to be a breakthrough year for so many of you. And one of the things we always want to remember is that part of that breakthrough is discovering ourselves. And that is what each of my guests today has gone through in their own individual way. And I think it's so important for us as people to remember that the walk we walk in life is our own individual experience. And what may work for one person may not work for another. But learning how to be true to yourself, learning how to have integrity with who you are, where you are in a moment, and realizing that things can change can make a great deal of difference. I remember a young woman that I talked with. This was about 2 years ago, and she was really in a funk. She was stuck. She didn't want to change. She was caught up in a fantasy in her mind that never was going to ever have a reality. And that fantasy was that she wanted to be involved in some kind of a creative environment, but she honestly did not want any responsibility. She had been floating around, she'd been on welfare, she wasn't happy with that, but she didn't want to work towards a change. Well, we had a very productive conversation, and I found out later she was very angry with me because I had been very, very blunt and very clear in what I perceived. However, it was about a year later I found out that she had gotten a job, and she'd gotten a job working for a local, a small business. And it had transformed her life. She came alive. And she became aware of the fact that the fantasy that she was so caught up with really was like a little girl part of herself that didn't want to grow up. Today, she's a woman that is able to stand on her own 2 feet. Her self-esteem, her self-respect is a lot higher than it was 2 years ago. You see, nobody can do it for you. And even though I could see things clearly for this person, she was the one that had to initiate action. She was the one that had to make a choice. Well, she didn't stay mad at me. In fact, she told someone, she said that Donna was right about what she said. And it made me feel good for her, because we always have to recognize our journey is our journey. We are responsible for the choices that we make, good, bad, or indifferent. Don't be afraid of that. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we'll be back, same time, same place. I look forward to having you join me again. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.